Whatever mood we're in, we like to surround ourselves with things that match it. Whether that's watching a tearjerker when we're feeling blue, or listening to the right music to get inspired, it's important to curate the right vibe. That's why we're excited to partner with Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. And with our promo code REHASH, you can get 20% off your first order on mood.com. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, sleepy time to get you settled for a restful night, or chill out for some needed relaxation. Sure, you can get THC gummies just about anywhere these days, but why not personalize it? Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorsteps. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code REHASH. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code REHASH when you check out to save 20% off your first order.
Funny to find you here.
Yeah, what are the odds? But only one of us can rule this town. I challenge you to a duel.
What would we duel with if we were dueling?
What do you mean?
Like, what would our method of duel be?
Aren't there, like, there's basically two? There's swords or there's guns?
A joust!
I think you'd be more handy than me with a sword.
We did do sword play in high school, and that's a skill that for some reason I have.
But I wonder who has better aim.
I don't know. We're both useless.
But a duel with words.
Oh, a duel of wit.
A duel of wit. Oh god, I'm not very witty.
I'm not very witty either.
No, I actually, it's like shameful how unwitty I am.
We're watching Drag Race right now, and it's just like, every time I watch them do the competitions where they have to be witty, like Snatch Game or something, I'm like, I could quite literally never do that.
Or even just like their rapport. I'm like, to have rapport with somebody, ugh.
Banter?
Banter?
What is that?
Witty banter? Not this girl. Not I. Speaking of wit, this week's episode is about Vine.
Vine, the app that I never actually had and just watched on Facebook.
Considering that we now live in a world where social media is dominated by TikTok, a video sharing app, it's a little hard to imagine how the app that many consider its predecessor crashed and burned after a mere 4 years.
So sad.
But today we're going to be discussing Vine, what it did right, what went wrong, and its indisputable legacy within internet culture. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about paradigm shifts, moments that change the way we do things for better or for worse. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, mini-sodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We love when you guys do that. Maya.
You said Maya, and then my throat made a noise.
I thought that was my stomach.
You thought it was your own stomach?
I don't know. I'm not very in touch with my body.
You said Maya, and my throat went bleh. Hannah.
Can you describe Vine as an app, like functionally as an app?
It's time to speak my truth. I didn't have an iPhone until 2015.
Ping, ping, ping.
Because I'm a big fat loser. And so I didn't have Vine because I had a BlackBerry. And so the way that I consumed Vine was on Facebook. Vine had like an official Facebook group. And they would post like all the popular Vines from that day onto the Facebook group. And so I'd flip through the Vines that way.
So cute.
But it was primarily from at least my Facebook page and not the app. Very, very short, I believe 6-second videos from random strangers all over the place that you could kind of flip through.
Not quite. You're right about the 6-second video limit, which was apparently because phone data was so expensive and limited at the time that they were like, okay, we can't make it any longer or it's going to eat up people's data plans. So 6-second videos, it wasn't randomized. It was actually follow-based.
Oh, okay. This episode is actually for privileged people who had iPhones back in 2012.
Yeah, actually, this is where everybody has to...
expose their privilege?
No, that's not it. What is it? They're like, my privilege.
Know their privilege.
Acknowledge my privilege. Yeah, this is what this is. So it was like follow-based. So you'd follow accounts, but they had like a home page that was like kind of curated. And then there was like limited editing tools. Like it took a while before you could like add music onto Vine. And it was mobile only for the first little bit. And even when they made it for the computer, like you had to have the app to create an account.
Yeah, so I know.
So it's very limited to people who had like smartphones.
BlackBerry will be avenged one day.
I also was not an avid Vine user. I didn't really use it. I looked at my friend's Vine account. Like I made Vines with my friend on her account and sometimes watch videos with her, but I wasn't really on Vine either.
And such is the genesis of you not really consuming social media in the way that most people
do. Yeah, I learned through this podcast, through talking to Maya, that I'm weird with social media and that I'm not normal and that I'm
a weird freak.
Perhaps like an old person because I'm always lurking in the shadows watching it from afar, but I'm not really... present.
She barely watches people's stories. She thinks that's weird.
I don't think it's weird. I do watch people's stories. I think it's weird to see who watches your stories.
Oh, it tells you everything. It tells you everything.
And I don't want to know everything. I think ignorance is bliss.
And I wish I had that willpower.
I honestly actively make sure I can't see who's... I'll just ignore it entirely because I just don't want to know. I don't want to know I'm being perceived. And I guess that's what social media is for.
I'm just an attention whore.
I don't post a lot.
Oh. That's fair.
So we're going to go back to the early 2010s, which is where we seem to always find ourselves on this show.
Well, it's a show about social media, and that is when social media not began, but definitely had its juicy period.
Would you call us historians?
I'd say so. I've been saying I'm a film critic recently with very little verification, so I guess, yeah, and also we're historians.
You're more a film critic than we are historians, I would.
No.
Okay.
Fake it till you make it.
That's so true. In the social media landscape of the early 2010s, every app serves its own distinct function. So Facebook is like a place to chat and keep up with friends and family. Twitter is like for text-based posts. And Instagram is for sharing photos.
Back when we were in middle school, Twitter was just like for adults. I was like, ew.
It was boring, except I loved Degrassi. And I used to much music would be like, tweet things. And I'd tweet. No.
I used it to make a One Direction fan account, so.
So there you go.
Here we are.
Yeah. It only makes sense that an app for sharing videos would fit perfectly into this ecosystem. At least that's what Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is hoping in 2012. At this time, Twitter has recently lost out on buying Instagram to Facebook, who buys the app for $1 billion. When Dorsey finds the still unreleased Vine, he, like, hopes it'll beat out Instagram as the next big thing.
Mm.
And Vine, when it's released, it grows exponentially. 9 months after it launches in January 2013, it has a user base of 39 million users.
Oh my god, crazy.
Yeah. But Vine doesn't grow to the size of Instagram, nor does it become as ubiquitous, but it does develop its own thing. Mainly short comedy videos and memes that are popular with young people. Some of these videos make their way outside of the platform and become part of, like, internet canon.
For my, yeah.
Exactly. For example, there's, like, what are those? On Fleek. Why are you always lying?
Hi, my name is Trey and I got a basketball game tomorrow. You seen that one?
I haven't.
It's my favorite Vine.
My favorite Vine is, it's a party and this girl takes this big drag from a vape and, like, blows a bunch of smoke out, and then it pans to this guy and he just goes, wow.
Oh, I've seen that one.
I love that one.
What about the one that's like, is, and they were roommates?
And they were roommates.
Yeah. This guy's sitting on, like, a brownstone, like a stoop, and this girl's on her phone, like, passing by, and out of context she's like, and they were roommates, and then he just goes, and they were roommates.
And we say that all the time.
Yeah, because we're roommates and everyone thinks that we're dating.
And they were roommates. I remember I went to see the internet in 2015, and in the, like, pre-show they played the extended version of Why You Always Lying, and people, like, were dancing and singing along to it. And Vine creates its own stars. Can you name any?
Logan Paul.
Yes.
Lele Pons.
Yeah.
Her friend who does the same types of videos as her, and I can't remember her name.
Sure. Shawn Mendes.
I feel like that just really ruins his brand credibility.
I think it makes perfect sense because he's, like, post Justin Bieber, Justin Bieber. And so he, of course, he's from Vine.
Yeah, I guess. But I see him more as a bit of an adult than Justin Bieber. Like, as a star.
Really? I think he's a little baby.
He's a little baby spiritually, but to me, has more of an adult presence than Justin Bieber did, because Justin Bieber was a kid.
Yeah, Shawn Mendes was, like, really young when he got discovered.
No, I know, but when he got, like, when he blew up. Maybe I just haven't been following him.
There's Nash Greer and Cameron Dallas, Liza Koshy, King Bach.
Oh my god. Yeah, all these people are, like, the worst. Truly the worst.
I feel like you might be more familiar with all of them because a lot of them later made it to YouTube.
Well, a lot of them also moved to Instagram and became, like, Instagram comedians as well. Like, uh-huh. YouTube and Instagram. And it was a lot of, like, females be like, bleh, and males be like, bleh. And, like, King Bach has this video where a bunch of people, like, basically get, like, raped in an elevator, and that's, like, that's the joke of the video. It's, yeah, a lot of these people are just truly the worst to these creators. No offense.
You don't love Logan Paul? You aren't happy that he was blessed upon us?
Yeah, no.
So for this episode, I got to speak to Izzy Custodio, who listeners may know from her amazing YouTube channel, Be Kind Rewind.
She's bestie.
Ooh.
We'll say it now.
We love Izzy. And she actually worked at Vine for a few years and got to witness Vine's heyday firsthand.
She actually has the craziest career. We hung out with her last year at TIFF, and she was like, she just already is, like, a cool YouTuber who has a cool YouTube channel, and then it's just so random that she also happened to have this, like, very cool job back in the day. She's had another cool job for the past few years. I don't know, she's just very cool.
She's cool.
She's cool.
And here's our cool girl now. Do you want to tell me a bit about yourself?
My name is Izzy. I have a YouTube channel called Be Kind Rewind. And yeah, I mostly talk about classic films and actresses on that channel. And it's a lot of fun. And that's pretty much all I do with my time.
It's a really great channel. If you aren't watching it, you should go watch it. Very educational about old Hollywood. But today we're actually not talking to you about old Hollywood. We are talking to you about something else from your past, which is that you used to work at Vine.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Could you tell me what your role was at Vine?
I started working there in 2014, so I had just graduated college. When I started there, I was basically in a customer service role for the first year or 2 years that I was there. It was a really, really small team. Like, I would say it was around 20 people. And so you get to know everybody really well. And basically, I think they came to trust me and like knew that I had good ideas and stuff. And eventually I started working full time and in more like content stuff. So I would work with some of the Viners and on events and stuff like that. I worked there from 2014 to a couple months before it shut down. So I was there almost the whole time.
Could you tell me a bit more about like the work culture there?
I mean, everyone was really, really hardworking. I'll say that. I think because we were such a small team, and I think maybe there's a stereotype where it's like, yeah, you like take a break and play ping pong for 4 hours with like that kind of tech stereotype. But it wasn't that in my experience. Like, they really, really cared about the creators on the content side of things, at least.
They had a very like close relationship with like their big creators then. Like, were they in the office and stuff?
Yeah, they would come by a lot. I know that that team tried really hard to arrange for opportunities with them and arrange for sponsorships for them, because we obviously, Vine wasn't paying them directly. So it was like, we wanted to make sure that they still felt like they were appreciated by the platform. And so they were asked a lot about features that they would want, and they would come in and kind of consult on that kind of thing. So I would say, yeah, like there was definitely a culture of caring about the creator, at least in the capacity that we could, which I don't think was ever enough for them, which I get.
Have you noticed this trend where anytime a social media app has a really unique feature, another will just try and like add it to theirs?
Yeah, anytime anyone tries to do anything, Instagram just like, for example, Instagram Threads just came out. Instagram Stories were a riff on Snapchat. We just kind of forget as time goes on, but it's like, yeah, they're all trying to amalgamate each other's innovations into their own apps.
TikTok even tried to do a Be Real thing that they quickly, I think, got rid of.
None of these companies know that hard and tried rule of stick to what you know. No. Just stick to what you fucking know. No. Although Instagram Stories is actually a huge success story, which is...
I mean, I think young people do use Snapchat.
This is a famous thing for us where our generations, like my year and Hannah's year, I feel like we were this like one blip in time where people younger than us continued to use Snapchat and people older than us continued to use Snapchat. And we stopped using it during this like one short period in high school. And that never continued, but everyone around us is constantly using Snapchat, and it's something that I just don't understand.
I feel like by the time I got Snapchat, it felt a little passé that I didn't even bother adding that many people to it. I didn't use it that much.
Oh, I used it quite a bit to talk to, like, random boys from other high schools.
True. But I'm also like, why did it get phased out? I guess it didn't get phased out, but why don't we use it? Because it makes sense.
I just think there was a blip in time for us.
Wow. Like a shift or not
like a
shift.
Gap.
Yeah, like something in the fabrics of time and space crinkled.
Yeah. A wrinkle in time.
I guess.
In so many words.
With that in mind, in 2013, Instagram launches Instagram Video. Instagram Video is much more advanced than Vine. It has a 15-second like length limit and more sophisticated editing tools and just a larger user base to launch to. Vine immediately feels its impact. There are like 10 times the amount of people on Instagram than there are on Vine, and just like a wider range of people use it. In an article for Wired, Matt Honan describes what's happening between Instagram and Vine as a proxy war for their parent companies, Facebook and Twitter. What do you make of all these younger, hipper apps being acquired by these bigger companies that are like trying to stay relevant?
Kind of genius.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just looking back at it. It's like, yeah, these were good business decisions, at least for a moment, right?
I mean, Instagram was a great
acquisition for Facebook, unfortunately, who has just run it into the ground, essentially. But that's just capitalism, baby.
But thinking about, you know, I think there was a time where Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg were probably the young rebels, and then suddenly they just become these big companies, and now they're like looking for the little guys that they can suck up into their empires.
Well, going back to BuzzFeed, where we talked about like rebel capitalism and this whole concept of bringing countercultural values into like a capitalistic organization. It's like, yeah, all of these companies always start out as the game changers and the rule breakers, and then they just become the establishment. It's like rock and roll. Like rock and roll starting out as counterculture and then becoming the music establishment, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a similar thing happening here. But that's just like the nature of capitalism. Capitalism encourages competition and it encourages acquisition and encourages all these things, that it's like the natural, inevitable next step is for them to become the big boys.
Yeah.
The big
fish. Ultimately, I'm sure the people who were behind apps like Instagram and Vine, their aspirations are to be the next Zuckerberg. Like, it's not quite the same as rock and roll because they're not rebels themselves.
No, yeah, and that's the difference, is that they aren't actually counterculture.
So I asked Izzy about what it was like in the Vine office at this time.
A lot of the coverage of Vine's shutdown mentions its inability to keep up with competitors like Facebook and Snapchat, and I was wondering if you were privy to this at the time.
I mean, I think there was definitely a sense that we weren't able to ship features as fast as we probably needed to be able to, or that our ambitions or imagination for what the app could be was outpacing what we were able to actually engineer. Because we would get so many ideas from creators who would just be like, yeah, I wish we could do this, or I wish this would happen. And most of those ideas never came to fruition. I think there was also some preciousness around the 6-second format. Obviously, even TikTok has made videos longer and longer as time has gone on. I mean, 6 seconds now seems so short. I mean, it's amazing what people were able to do in that time. And I remember it was a pretty big debate whether we wanted to go up to 15 seconds. What would that look like? Do we need to have a full screen or can we keep it square? Like, these were all kind of debates that we were having that I think are kind of taken for granted now. Like, yeah, would a TikTok ever be square? No, but that is something that we were thinking about because like Instagram was square. So that's what people were used to. And so, yeah, like all of these things were kind of being innovated and it maybe took longer or was just clunky because of the bureaucracy of Twitter, I think.
It's so interesting to be talking about something that was less than a decade ago.
Yeah.
In this way where it feels like within the course of like such a short period of time, just how the format that Vine started has just like grown into what TikTok does. Yeah.
I remember one of the first big events that we ever had was celebrating the feature that we shipped, which was that you could add music. Like, it took years to be able to like add music into the app. And like, what is the copyright situation for that? You know, if we have 20 team versus like all of TikTok like mobilized to cover that, it's completely different. It was just a huge beast to be like, okay, well, it's only 6 seconds. Like, are they okay with that? How do we add this in? What does the library look like? What's the user experience like? Like, do you need to click into a different screen? Is that too many clicks? I don't know. It's like they had to figure all of that stuff out. And it was a massive achievement at the time. And now it's just something like TikTok basically opened with that. Like, yeah, they started kind of, you know, standing on those shoulders of those engineers.
It's interesting. Like, I've never thought about Vine in the context of like being like an underdog, because it's like a big social media company. And when you're outside of it, you're not thinking about it like that, because it was so popular when it was popular. But I'm feeling really like sentimental and like it feels like the little engine that could.
Yeah, I think it was, because I don't think most people think about it as being literally like 20 to 30 people working on this one thing, like that covers the entire globe. It seems like it's just a massive company. And obviously we had resources from Twitter to fuel all of that. But it was also, I think, always kind of an uphill battle.
Vine does sort of bounce back after the launch of Instagram Video, and it remains one of the most downloaded apps on the App Store for some time. And people chalk this up to the fact that despite its simple, easy to replicate functions, Vine has something that can only really happen organically, what Matt Honan, writing for Wired, calls its distinct culture.
Like Quebec.
Here's Izzy again. I asked her a bit about the culture of Vine and the Vine era.
I think it was crazy. Yeah, I think it was really similar to what TikTok is now. I mean, there were so many different types of content that was being made. It was like horny teenagers who were like trying to show off or like thirst trap. It was bottom of the barrel comedy. It was legitimate comedians trying to see what they could do with the platform. Musicians making really clever loops. Animators making really clever loops. So I think it was just kind of one of the first platforms, even including YouTube, that made people feel like they were entitled in a good way to making something for themselves. It just felt very easy and low pressure at first. And then eventually, I mean, I think it became one of those things where people saw it as entertainment, but they were less inclined to make Vines themselves. I mean, there was some kind of crazy stat. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was an overwhelming majority, like 80 or 90% of people only logged in to consume Vines. And then that small remainder actually made them. And so I think at that point, it kind of had already crossed over into something where it felt like there were stakes to posting, which I think can kind of change how you feel about a platform for sure.
Vine is the Quebec of social media giants.
That's a great joke for all of our international audience. Our majority American listeners.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Just Canadian girly things. What would you describe as the culture of Vine?
Very DIY. Not very serious. Like a very comedy forward environment. It really did range to me from all ages just because of the people who were featured in the videos. I don't know if the users were necessarily all ages, but it felt like the people and the faces that you were seeing were from all over, from different age ranges, from different ethnicities, like all of that. And just overall, yeah, a very lighthearted environment, I would say.
I think that's like a really important part of it is the kind of unserious, like unpolishedness of it, especially like at a time where people were sort of discovering that like social media could be a job and could be a business thing. Vine feels not an oasis because people became famous from Vine, but it just feels like it's the separate entity. What to you makes a successful Vine?
The Vines that I love the most, and this is probably part of the little itch I have to... Wait, no?
The itch little... I have to scratch.
Part of the bone I have to pick with all these like Vine stars is like, to me, the content can't be like too curated, too constructed. All the Vines that are my favorite are like random slice of life moments that just happens to happen. I feel like Vine was kind of like the spiritual follow-up to like America's Funniest Home Videos and Tosh.0 and those types of MTV type clip shows, where it was just people like just kind of like laughing at other people or laughing with them, depending on the video, and just getting like a little bit of a rush of adrenaline from this really short content. But yeah, that's kind of what I like out of my Vines is just random core.
Yeah, that random core is exactly it. It's like watching those videos, but you're just getting the best part of them, which is the incident. And it's just so removed from context that it can transfix you. And then they, you know, you loop it and you're just watching it in an endless cycle.
I think it really did initiate this type of like humor that we have now, like the contextless humor. The humor is in the lack of context. That is the funny part. There is no joke. The joke is the lack of context.
Absolutely. It's absurd. And what Hua Su for The New Yorker said about Vines, which I really liked, was that they are about the speed and the surreal possibilities of everyday life. Like, aww, it's just weird shit that can happen and you're lucky enough to get it on camera.
I know, it kind right of moment. Felt like the video version of My Life is Average, you know what I mean? I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that, but it was like this forum website where you could just go through and read people's submissions, these really short form submissions about just little things that had happened in their lives. And they weren't average things. Like, they were like these kind of like little beautiful moments or these little fucked up moments. It kind of almost feels like Vine is that in a way.
Okay, I just had the craziest thought. It's like, is Vine not the 21st century version of that famous Hemingway story? Baby shoes for sale, never worn. So the whole thing is there's this challenge, like, try to write the shortest sad story you can. And I think Hemingway wrote this. Maybe I'm butchering the context a bit. But basically, the story is baby shoes for sale, never worn. And you get just from that that
baby died.
Yeah, or was never born or whatever. And Vine, to me, it's like that. It's like, how can you elicit a reaction and an emotion from somebody in the shortest and most context-free period of time? And like, your brain is doing the work of trying to build the world around it to explain how you got to this point.
I think that is like the genuine kind of skill of someone who is posting on Vine, like someone who's able to pinpoint the humor in 6 seconds of a clip.
Vine also holds a space on the internet for sincerity and joy, which we know is a rarity. Why do you think that is compared to other social media apps at the time?
I feel like maybe because more of the emphasis was put on like the video and less so the forum aspect of it all. So there's just less opportunity. Like, of course, they had comments, but it just wasn't as priority for those environments, which I feel like now part of the hellscape of all these other social media sites is that they're so forum heavy. Twitter especially is like maybe the biggest hell site of all of them because of the fact that it's like basically only a forum, a text forum.
Yes.
I don't know. I just don't think that there's an opportunity for any of these videos to say more than they're saying because there's no time to say it. So it's like there's not an opportunity to go any deeper into it and then cause a stir.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just too short to really get into anything. And the format works better for like lighthearted videos. So that's the kind of stuff that gets made and is like recreated, right?
Making a serious political statement in a 6 second Vine.
Well, Izzy was telling me about, you know, Vine shut down right before the election and just how Hillary Clinton tried Vine. She didn't say anything serious, but like thinking about a future where politicians were trying to use Vine to like reach young people.
And again, the constructiveness, it's like, no, that people wouldn't take well to that because it's like, ew, you're so corny.
She was roasted for it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Vine is also mostly used by younger people, like we've said. So the content that comes out of it is distinctly catering to what they find funny or interesting. We kind of talked about this already, but like Vine humor, it's absurd, it's context-free, it's random core.
Ironic even sometimes. No.
Sometimes, but also sincere.
Yeah.
You know, I think the stuff that works, at least, it's based in sound bites. And like, I think the randomness hits a bit more in that format than it does in like text-based memes.
I did follow a Twitter account called Anti-Joke Apple, and it was just like jokes that weren't jokes. And that was the whole joke of it. And maybe that's similar.
Maybe. Have you seen Back at It Again at Krispy Kreme?
Oh, maybe. God, I've seen so many Vine compilations. It's actually crazy. Like, so many Vines that I can't remember half of them.
Can I show it to you?
Yeah. It's this guy holding a box of Krispy Kreme donuts and saying, "Back at it again at Krispy Kreme." And then it, like, cuts to a clip of him doing a really impressive series of backflips and then immediately hitting the sign that's, like, hanging from the ceiling. And the clip cuts before he even falls.
Yeah.
You just hear a and then it cuts.
And then because of the loop feature, it just goes again.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, yep. Brian Feldman, writing about this specific Vine, described Vine in a way I really liked, which was, "Vines create an odd tension in the viewer. Each video is a mere 6 seconds, but it loops on endlessly. You develop an intimate knowledge of the 6 seconds you're given through the peephole of the Vine, but are left totally in the dark about the context and resolution."
It kind of almost falls into that phenomenon of people quoting Mean Girls. In the same way, like, you become so familiar with it. I feel like Vine became what Mean Girls became in a way, in the sense that people, it was this way to kind of socialize with other people by referencing Vines and talking about them. And we've done it in this episode, being like, you know that one? And they become part of the zeitgeist, really. Like, they become embedded in it because you're watching them over and over and over again.
Which maybe is just meme culture.
But this is so early in meme culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Mean Girls itself has just become meme. It's interesting.
Has just become meme. Part of like the joy of memes, or part of the spreadability of memes, is the repetition of it. Like, the whole point is that you're repeating almost like a format, or you're repeating a joke.
Yeah.
And that's the joke.
And the reimaginings of it as well.
This whole episode is just me going, and that's the joke.
And that's the joke. And that's why it's funny. Yeah, I feel like Vine really appeals to, like, my sense of humor.
Oh, she's different.
No, these kinds of Vines, these random ones, because it's just absurd. It's just, and I think that's the funniest thing in the world, is things that weren't supposed to be funny, but just were.
Yeah, jokes that are the funniest to me are ones where you actually don't understand it, and that's why it's hilarious.
Yeah.
There's this famous, like, meme account on Instagram that got really popular, and it's, like, all extremely, like, ironic memes, whatever, very, like, of this current time, and one of the memes was just this guy. He was tweeting at, like, a celebrity or something, and he got something wrong about it, or he was tweeting at Walmart, and then they, like, corrected him in a response, and then he just went, "Oh, I forgot," and he had, like, dead emoji next to it, and people thought it was the funniest thing on earth, and I thought it was so funny.
I'm laughing at it now.
It's like, why? Like, why is that funny? And that's why it's funny. And that's the joke.
Is it stupid? I wrote in my notes, try to explain why Vine is funny, continual brain farts. And I stand by it. Like, and there's no time for the joke to go on too long or, like, be explained to you, which can kill a joke. Like, it's just this singular thing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Do you think Vine influenced millennial / elder Gen Z humor, or is it, like, a product of it?
No, I think it influenced it because of the structure of it. Like you were saying, the short format wasn't created for any specific joke intention in mind. It's just that that was what the platform offered. That was the affordance of it. And so that is what we got. I think it's not a chicken and egg thing. I think we know exactly what influenced who. Obviously, I think we have a certain humor to us, and we were creating videos that were funny, that were going viral, and we were sharing those. But I think the platform also was contributing to that. Okay, maybe it is a chicken and egg thing.
I agree that it's a chicken and an egg thing. I don't know. I wonder if it's, like, made it harder for us to find other forms of humor funny, but...
Yeah, I'm curious to know what forms of humor have died with Gen Z and millennials.
I don't know, because then it's like, there was also popular comedy on Vine that sucked ass.
Lele Pons, like, to this day, I continue to wonder why she was famous. The thing is, children were on there, and I think children are, like, the main audiences of those figures.
It's actually Gen Z's fault.
Like, whenever you look at any of those figures on YouTube, you see the people commenting are all kids, which is always weird, too, because then these people make this, like, really explicit content, and you're like, oh, God.
Vine comedy is, like, there's two camps. You have person doing, like, dumb little thing trying to make you laugh, and then you have people that are just doing what we were describing earlier,
like videos that were caught by accident. Yeah,
its popular creators are also more diverse than the people who, you know, might blow up on Instagram at this time. Think about it, this is when Caroline Calloway was an OG influencer. Matt Honan points out that in the popular now section of the app, you'll find people who are, quote, distinctly younger, distinctly blacker, and distinctly gayer than society in general. And Izzy brought this up as well. She pointed out that just like there's a black Twitter, there was also black Vine. And like the popularity of the videos that came from those creators led to a lot of the kind of memes and slang that we associate with Vine in general. I mean, most of the videos we're referencing right now are by black creators.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the stuff that had the real longevity, because I can't quote a Logan Paul Vine or whatever these other people were doing. And it's actually the Vines that were typically from black creators that have become part of internet canon.
Once again, popular culture being influenced by black culture. Very interesting.
Expressions like on fleek, mm-hmm. and what are those came from black Vine creators. And I think it's really interesting because, at least for me at the time, as a person in the age demo, or like in the Vine age demo, like I don't think we were really talking about it, or at least no one I knew was talking about it at the moment.
Oh, definitely not. 2013? No.
Yeah, no. In an article for Vox, Aja Romano reflects on how the technical inaccessibility of Vine to older users and to BlackBerry users like Maya, because, you know, you had to have the app on your phone, you had to, like, know how to edit videos. It created a, quote, completely unique internet space for young black creators, and she credits the short length times and insular nature of the app for creating, like, a more informal space for people to experiment and explore, which I thought was really interesting. But 3 short years after Vine survives the invention of Instagram video, Twitter makes an announcement in 2016 that it's phasing Vine out.
So why is this?
Twitter has been looking for a buyer after some major profit losses. It announces to shareholders that it's going to start prioritizing certain aspects of the company over others, and I guess Vine just wasn't one of them. Twitter also lays off 9%.
It didn't make the cast list.
It didn't
make the cast. It's no longer in the running towards becoming America's next top model.
Twitter also lays off 9% of its employees. It hasn't been able to compete with Facebook, which is like growing at a much faster pace. And like while Vine does have its own niche, it hasn't proven to be the Instagram competitor that Twitter had hoped it would be. And the exceptionally short length of the videos on Vine made it really hard to integrate ads, which, as we talked about, are important.
Very important for the early 2010s.
Yep. So a number of Vine's biggest stars have left the platform for bigger opportunities on like YouTube or Instagram. Unlike Instagram and YouTube, Vine doesn't offer the ability to monetize because of the difficulties of like having ads on the platform. It eventually does announce at one point that it's going to offer that, but then it shuts down. They try with this social media agency called Niche, which Twitter buys and which is supposed to link creators with like brands for sponsored content. But Niche applies to all social media platforms, and so it doesn't really help bring people back to Vine.
It's cheating on Vine with everyone else.
With everyone else, yeah.
With the entire football team. I don't know why I keep making high school allusions.
The entire football team.
I don't even know if that's like the cliche that you would use in this context. What yeah. I'm trying to say is that Niche is a slut.
Yeah, Niche is the school slut. And I bet she's gonna be pregnant at prom. Vine can only really be used as a stepping stone also for content creators. Like, there isn't any pay, but it's a good way to get exposure and go somewhere else. I was curious if the lack of monetization also contributed to the kinds of content coming out of Vine, so I asked Izzy. You mentioned this earlier, but Vine also struggled to keep creators because it didn't allow them to monetize their content. We both benefit from making monetized content, and so, like, on the one hand, I appreciate and respect the fact that people, like, didn't want to work for free or wanted to find other opportunities, but I also wonder, do you think that the same kinds of like funny, authentic content would have been made if people on Vine could make a profit?
I don't know. It's really hard to say. I mean, I think people who are making really funny stuff now and are profiting from it are still doing it regardless of whether or not, well, not regardless, but they're managing to make good stuff while also having that incentive. So I guess like it's always possible. I do think what has changed is like you can't get a TikTok now without knowing that it is possible for you to become famous. Whereas when Vine started, I do think it was just kind of a silly group of people who would naturally be gravitating toward making fun things for themselves and just that they like to create generally. And then sort of by nature of the app blowing up, like accidentally almost becoming famous.
Right.
And so like, in that sense, maybe we kind of stumbled upon a really clever group on accident, or and then, you know, gradually you get to the lowest common denominator as people figure out that that is a pathway toward prominence. But I think there's like a level of pressure that TikTok has now that Vine never had. I don't know. Where do you stand on this? I feel very torn.
I think there's something quaint and like nice looking back now at the idea of people just making stuff online for the sake of making stuff online, because we hadn't really all picked up on the fact that like many people could make lucrative careers off of posting. Mm-hmm. And again, like I think if people are putting in like the full-time work of being a creator or an influencer or whatever, they should be paid for the work that they do.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I think there's maybe something, the casualness of like posting a 6-second video and just posting because you just want to make people laugh or like you were inspired to do something. I don't know. I wonder if it's just something that you could recreate if you knew that it was all for like monetary purposes. And then also like the idea of once maybe you include brands and like that kind of thing and like yourself, like you as a person become a brand, like that would just maybe change how you thought about the content you're making.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about it. I'm not saying people making stuff now should stop getting paid for it.
No. But... yeah, I don't think that's it either. But I think you're right. I mean, maybe it's kind of like, because I do think like in a way, even when people weren't being paid monetarily, I think there is like a payoff or like an incentive to become popular in anything online that is like incentive enough in and of itself that can attract people and not always the most like creative or clever people. So like there is always going to be that type of creator that I guess is really just out to make the most clickable thing, and that's it. And then I guess, yeah, once you add the money on top of it, it becomes a whole other level of kind of exploitative and monstrous.
What do you think?
I think it's really fascinating just thinking about a time on the internet when people were just making stuff for the joy of making stuff and half the time not even expecting an audience. And I think that is what we love about Vine so much. But again, hard to monetize it on there just because they're 6-second videos. So people are like, why should you be making money off of 6 seconds of work? But then also, Izzy so right talking about the difference in vibes between the people who saw that and tried to capitalize on it versus the people who weren't trying to. I think that's something that's so true with TikTok today, thinking about, you know, like Charli D'Amelio, nothing against her as a human being at all, but like her videos never show up on my FYP because it's like, I'm not about to find entertainment out of them. Like they're all sponsored. They're all full-time job driven. And I obviously can't talk. I do that on my channel. But because of the format of TikTok, I find it a bit harder to enjoy that kind of stuff. And I find it weird almost. I don't know, because there's supposed to be this random element of that on it. And I think Vine, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think with Vine, it's really hard to have a planned out concept and then create it because you're limited to 6 seconds. That I don't think that even the people who are trying to capitalize off of their Vines are putting in the work that even Charli D'Amelio is putting in to a TikTok video. Like that is just calculating how many more seconds of air time she has. Like that contributes to how much work is being put in there. And like,
but I guess there is something to be said about putting work into getting something down to 6 seconds, which is also in itself kind of impressive.
Yeah, but also that kind of pre-planned stuff, I guess to me just, I don't think it's that funny.
It does not hold. It does not hold.
And like, I think what's interesting is that a lot of the most beloved and like famous Vines aren't from people who are professional Viners, like we said. They're just funny videos that happen to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you could really translate that to other platforms except maybe Twitter with words. And people aren't on Twitter. Like, I'm sure people can monetize on Twitter to maybe in some...
Well, yeah, if you ever see those tweets that blow up and then you scroll down the thread and right under the thread, the person's like, go buy this hot new slime. And you're like, huh? Because these advertisers saw their tweet blow up. Mm-hmm. And then they go to them and they're like, can you sell our random garbage product, please? That's how that works, I think.
But I think people want to be popular on Twitter for the thrill of being popular on Twitter rather than like that being their job. Because of the short format, I think that makes sense.
Twitter's a whole other thing because it's like the momentary validation of someone agreeing with your opinion, whereas mm-hmm. Vine is not that.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. There are many more incentives to wanting to go viral on Twitter than Vine.
Yeah, I think it can assist your career in ways that Vine couldn't. Yeah,
definitely.
Over the years, there's also a lot of turnover at Vine with some of its creators leaving, and that also impacts the product, especially when competing platforms also start adding more video features. So both Snapchat and Facebook bring in live videos in 2015, and Twitter itself even allowed for videos to be posted directly on the site. So it just made it less and less necessary for a place where you can only watch videos, you can only watch 6 seconds of them.
It's so different to me though, because it's like Vine felt kind of like a game in the way that like the videos on Twitter and Instagram don't. Like there's something about Vine that felt like, okay, It almost felt like going and logging into a computer game. Like, it was like, I'm going to go log into Vine and I'm just going to turn my brain off and watch these videos. And it felt like just pure entertainment and pure adrenaline in the way that, like, videos on Twitter, I'm watching them and being like, ugh.
I think videos on Twitter and Instagram served more of, like, a functional purpose that for people who weren't, I guess, teens, it made more sense. And that's why I think that, like, they just meshed into the platforms that older people were already on.
Yeah. It's just weird that it managed to kind of supplant Vine, because to me they're so different. Like, it's just, Vine just has a completely different function to me than Twitter does in general. So even videos on Twitter to me don't feel like, it doesn't feel like, oh, Instagram, like making the explore page basically like a Pinterest mood board, or, you know, taking the stories or doing threads or
yeah,
any of that kind of thing.
No, I know. It was its own thing, and I just don't think it was valued by, like, the boring old people in charge of it. Actually, I'm sure they were pretty young, the people in charge of it, but they weren't as young as the people using it.
30-year-olds. Elderly. Decrepit.
People are devastated by the death of Vine. The hashtag RIP Vine trends on Twitter, and people, like, share their favorite videos. And originally, Twitter says that they're taking away the function to create new Vines, but the website will stay up for people to watch and download ones that, like, already exist. But then, eventually, it shuts down even that, and you can only find Vines if you know the username of the creator via the website.
Once again, Twitter letting us down, just once again.
I know. And I really like this quote from Hua Su in his New Yorker piece about the death of Vine. So he writes, "The entertainment industries of the previous century are criticized these days as slow-moving and self-regarding, blind to where the culture is going. Yet much of today's economy is built on notions like, quote, disruption and pivoting, on making hasty escapes and cutting losses. From this perspective, there is no point in archiving the past or dwelling on its minor revolutions. The problems they're solving are always in the future."
It almost feels like when you go to these types of sites, it's like going into an abandoned warehouse, like something, or just like an abandoned factory or something. Like, all the remnants are still there, but it's not functioning anymore.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. And it's so weird because it's like the internet is forever. That's what at least it's positioned to be. And it's like the digital footprint exists, and the you can go back and see all the archives. But yeah, it's so interesting seeing that these kinds of apps that are being created in these places that are ephemeral and supposed to be lasting forever are the very ones that aren't preserving their history. It's so interesting.
Yeah, and just the idea that, like, Vine was bought with the intentions of being the next big thing, and when it didn't pan out to be that, but was its own special thing that was smaller, unique, but still had importance, it was just kind of disregarded in, like, the pursuit of that other next big thing, which was what Twitter did with it.
Chasing the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chasing the money and not valuing, like, the cultural contributions. And I know it sounds funny to be talking about Vine in that way, but it did contribute a lot to, like, I would say popular culture.
Well, I think there's a lot of parallels between this and, like, the shuttering of the BuzzFeed newsroom, just in the way of a company not valuing the actual impact and importance of one of its factions, and instead just abandoning that in favor of profit.
Yeah. And, you know, thankfully the most popular Vines can still be accessed in YouTube compilations.
Hell yeah, they can.
I think some are even on the Internet Archive. But it's sad to think of all the less remarkable digital footprints that were just wiped away when the site shut down. Like, I was looking for Vines that my friend and I filmed on her account in high school. Just, they're pretty bad and stupid, but just for us. And, like, I don't know, just the idea that these things are gone, even for your own enjoyment. Like, yes, the really viral things are still up there. We can still all enjoy them. But the stuff that was just, like, a document of your existence at that age, in that era, being so hard to access is really sad.
I need to go to Facebook and put all of my photos on a hard drive because I'm so scared of all of those being wiped away. It's the only reason I've kept my account. No way in hell are you going to catch me using Facebook. I feel so bad because so many adults that I, like, know from my life have messaged me and DM'd me on there, but I don't check my messages, so it just looks like I'm an asshole. But
yeah, on birthdays and stuff.
Yeah, but I keep it open because I just want to see my memories. And we in recent conversations have brought them up in random chats with friends, and it takes 2 seconds to just go and find a photo from 2013. And that is really cool.
And it's so scary that this is where they live. Yeah. And
where Facebook is headed. Probably not going to be up for too long. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And like, we've been taught, especially our generation, to like use these social media apps as a photo album or like a box in your attic to store
a time capsule. Memories.
Yeah, exactly. But we're not in control of their fates. Like, we don't get to pick where they end up.
Again, they're ephemeral.
Yeah.
You can't touch it. You can't like stow it away in your closet.
And just even like Izzy brought up the idea of backing up her videos as MP4s and then being like, but that technology could become obsolete too. Like,
yeah, not being able to open it. Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And with the way Apple's also headed, who fucking knows?
Well, yeah, exactly. And Huasu like pointed out in his article how, you know, Apple's gotten rid of CD readers. It's gotten rid of traditional USB ports, like ways of accessing old files
and planned obsolescence, guys. It's not a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Apple has not made a single innovation in the past like 5 to 10 years for their products other than just getting rid of useful ports and making you buy add-ons because they're just money grubbers.
They're money grubbers.
Steve Jobs died and all of their innovation just died with him.
No, I love only being able to use Bluetooth. I love it. There's just no consideration for the lives and like the footprints of the people who are using their products, right? They want your money, but they don't really care about how the product can actually functionally serve you. And they want it to replace old forms of technology that like allowed you to have ownership over your lives and your memories.
Yeah. I mean, once again, and we repeat, corporations don't care about human beings.
No. So let's talk a bit about Vine's legacy before we wrap things up. In 2016, Chinese company ByteDance releases a little app called TikTok. TikTok is sort of widely accepted as the evolved successor of Vine. In fact, the popularity of TikTok used to stump me because Vine failed.
I think we're missing a little app in the middle here, which is Musical.ly.
So Musical.ly was consumed by TikTok.
It was consumed by it, but I think when TikTok came out, I saw Musical.ly as kind of the follow-up to Vine. Yeah, kind of the bridge between Vine and TikTok. Because when TikTok first started, people used it like Musical.ly, I remember.
Yes.
And all of us just kind of being like, oh, these kids are dancing and singing on their apps again. And then TikTok became more like Vine as more people flooded onto it, I found.
No, definitely. Musical.ly, which will later become part of TikTok, was sort of the like bridge between the two, but also like the middle ground between what Vine did and what, or not the middle ground, sorry, TikTok is sort of like the center of
the Venn diagram.
There's a few reasons why TikTok has succeeded when Vine couldn't. They mostly lie in the differences between them. So what makes TikTok different from Vine?
Way more editing features. It has the music feature, which is a big one, like adding, well, I guess no, Vine did have that
later, but this came embedded in.
I feel like TikTok is significantly more personalized because of the tools it has. One, it has a very hyper personalized algorithm. Mm-hmm. I think it also has these kind of like vanity tools on it, like you can put filters. Effects and filters on people and stuff like that. It has a very sophisticated editing software. Okay, I say sophisticated with quotes because it's so annoying to edit videos on TikTok.
But comparatively,
and this is, of course, because it has 10 years on Vine, 10 years of technological advancement, but it's just significantly more sophisticated, and you can make longer videos on it, which really helps. And they keep getting longer and longer, which you will not catch me watching a video longer than a minute on TikTok. Like, no way.
They've definitely gotten a lot longer, you're right. And also, like, ByteDance, the company, had the money and like the ability to push TikTok in a way that like Vine just didn't have. Izzy told me it was like a huge deal trying to figure out if they could or should add music to Vine. Like, that was it. And then they had a party for the launch of that. It was such a big deal. TikTok just started with that. like music being a part of it. Like they just were able to move at such a faster pace.
Maybe because Vine was kind of like a little side project of Twitter, whereas TikTok, I'm not entirely sure what ByteDance's whole thing is, but seems like kind of their main pursuit. And so they were able to focus more of their money and attention to it in a way that Twitter wasn't going to.
Yeah, Vine's almost like a pet project. It could be that. And it's also the pandemic, right, like really helped TikTok thrive, at least like internationally.
Oh, you know I was filming dance videos on there in my most shameful era of life.
Yeah, I used to be like, I don't know what TikTok is. And then COVID came and I was like wasting hours on there. Yeah.
It honestly did feel like it got me through the pandemic a bit, but...
Yeah, it helps.
But it was an embarrassing era for us all.
One of the most famous things about TikTok is its hyper-specific FYP page, the For You page, which uses a secret algorithm that picks out the videos that you see on the app. And it's funny because, like, a person or a song or a trend could blow up on one side of TikTok, but, like, never be seen by someone who isn't on that side.
Oh my god, I'll reference the most, like, popular, well-known songs on TikTok, and Hannah's like, what? And you use it more than I do, but for some reason it's like, you just hasn't crossed your path.
There's just so many little sections of TikTok. There'll be someone whose videos I see all the time, and then I guess I'll stop being fed it, and I'll just assume they're off the app. And then I'll see them, and I'll be like, they're posting frequently, but I just am not being fed that anymore. And this is really different from Vine, which Izzy told me had actual people curating its like discovery page. They got to pick what to highlight. And then because people's feeds were dictated by who they followed and not an algorithm, there were Vine accounts dedicated to like revining other Vines and basically creating these collections of videos that people with similar tastes could like look to and like find new accounts to follow.
What your favorite Vine comp says about you.
And what do you think about this? Like, would you say Vine had a monoculture?
I think anything when you put it next to TikTok is a monoculture. True. I think just because TikTok is like the embodiment of, oh my god, yet again we'll say it, the attention economy. Like, I think, you know, it's feeding you these videos. For a while it got rid of the clock on your phone so you couldn't see the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's feeding you these videos after video, and it has this function where you just swipe and it's like very physically easy to go through. You can just waste hours on it. And because it's like a randomized algorithm, you're getting personalized content sent to you. So of course, like we were saying, everyone can be getting a different FYP, and that really shapes what you're consuming. So yeah, I think anything that has like some sort of curatorial team working behind it is going to be more monocultural than TikTok will.
Yeah, absolutely. We all know the same popular Vines.
Yeah, exactly. I do think there is a possibility for people to see the same popular TikToks. Like, a lot of TikToks do go mega viral and like millions of people are seeing it, so a lot of people can reference it. But I just think because of by way of the algorithm existing, there's less of the monoculture there.
Remember Me as a Baby?
And that's Me as a Baby.
It's this TikTok that's this weird puppet. There was a trend of people showing it to children and going, that was me as a baby.
No, it's them going, that was you as a baby. Oh. And the kid goes, that's me as a baby. And you're like, because it's like the child is so little and doesn't understand. Hasn't so had dumb. their mirror phase yet.
Yeah.
Don't understand that they're sentient yet.
Aww. Most of the retrospectives I've read about Vine generally look back on it fondly, especially in the context of today where it feels so quaint, so innocuous compared to TikTok, which hosts like the best and the absolute worst parts of the internet. The influence of Vine on online humor is impossible to deny, so much so that there are TikTok accounts with large followings that just repost popular Vines, and people are still posting and watching YouTube compilations of Vines. One of the more pessimistic like think pieces I read was by Brian Patrick Aja, also for The New Yorker, and he argued that Vine and Twitter were strange bedfellows because Twitter was carrying on the fight for the written word, while Vine was, quote, a sign that we're regressing from what we have been since Gutenberg, that is, people of the book to people of the picture, almost pre-literate in our tastes and entertainments. And you're a 70-year-old man, you, Maya.
Oh, yes, I am.
Do you see merit in this?
Yes, as a famous curmudgeon, I would say Yes. Like, I just thinking just about the way that Vine gave way to TikTok, and both of those formats have just very much condensed our attention spans or collapsed them. Just the concept of getting addicted to flipping through really short, really sensational videos that give you a hit of dopamine with every single one that you look at, and you can't stop watching them because you keep getting hits of dopamine and like adrenaline rushes. I think there's a lot of merit to what he's saying. I constantly think it's interesting the way that Twitter continues to persist, because when it first came out, I was like, who would read stinky words? But again, even Twitter, though, is like very short form in what you're reading. That's very shortened content. So it's actually not so different. The whole thing of Vine and Twitter was that they were both giving you a limit. Twitter has a character limit. Vine has a time limit. And it's like, all of that has contributed to this age we're living in now where we can't watch a movie, you know, without getting distracted. And I think he's very right. It also goes to, you know, like us, he's speaking to like this whole mass exodus from Facebook and us moving to a way more visual platform that's essentially just all visual. And that was the merit of Instagram. I think there is merit to what he's saying. A little bit doomsday, but that's what I'm all about.
I know, she's so old man yells at cloud for...
My pants are hiked up to my ribcage, and I am wearing a newspaper hat.
You're gonna be such a bitchy old person.
I'm just gonna like smoke a lot of hash. Mellow myself out.
I think this is true, but I also think culturally, looking back at Vine, I'm like, but it was also sometimes the internet being the place where we exchange ideas isn't always a good thing. And I liked that you couldn't exchange ideas on Vine.
Totally. That's why I think, you know, I have a lot more love for Vine than I have for TikTok, because TikTok has become just honestly an extension of Twitter in the sense that it's like way too many people's opinions and outrage being fueled. And Vine was just a simpler time. But I also think that was just a simpler time for the internet in general. Twitter wasn't the hell machine it is now. No. YouTube wasn't. Like, I just think that we're in late stage internet at the moment. And when 2012-2013 was happening, we were all a little bit more innocent to it.
Obviously, there are bad things that come with, like, the ignorance of Vine. People like Nash Greer were constantly getting in trouble for being, like, racist and homophobic and sexist. And
15-year-old white boy from, like, I'm pretty sure the suburbs. What are you expecting?
Yeah, and, like, Vine kind of left a lot of white kids talking with AAVE, and that was, like, the whole joke.
But that was just the culture at the time as well. Like, yeah. That was just a time of extreme shock humor, extremely offensive humor.
Yeah.
Anti-joke apple, let me tell you, those jokes, they were pretty edgy.
Izzy and I chatted about how we think Vine would have fit into our more politically conscious era of social media today. I don't know. I think the format for Vine really worked for comedy. It obviously didn't work for, like, discussing bigger ideas, but honestly, maybe that's for the better, because
okay,
TikTok is,
like... Okay, but also, think about when it shut down, because I remember, okay, I left Vine probably a month or so before Trump was elected, which means, like, I remember some of the last Vines that were ever created were about, like, the Republican debates, meaning, like, Vine pretty much shut down right before everybody decided they were, like, a full-time online activist. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I do not remember at all anybody getting on Vine and being like, here's three reasons why the representation in Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette does not work. Like, nobody did that. Nobody cared. That just, like, was not the culture at all.
I would love to see someone try to give those three arguments in six seconds.
In 6 seconds? I know, yeah. It'd be tough, but it was also it just wasn't, like, that wasn't what the app was at all.
That's a really good point about the election. Like, maybe that's when the internet turned from, like, a place of entertainment to, like, a place of purely, like, yeah, expressing ideas all the time, constantly, which I think, yeah, the problem with TikTok compared to what you guys do is that it's long enough to, like, make your argument, but too short to really get into the nuances of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, like, maybe the 6 seconds was a blessing, because you probably couldn't do anything in that amount of time. I mean, you might be able to, like, make fun of something
Yeah,
that, like, gets your point across, but you really can't do a lot.
No, you could cut in like a 2 second reaction of like a guy laughing or something, and
yeah,
and you'd be set. Which, yeah, I honestly, like, sounds really nice right now.
Totally. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. That's so wild how it just stopped right before then.
Do you think it's possible today for an app with a concept as simple as Vine to exist?
I think Be Real was that for a second. Like, Be Real, I kind of felt reminiscent of that because it just had this one gimmick. Mm-hmm. The gimmick was you post at the time that you get the notification. But we're already seeing that that doesn't have longevity. Like, people are leaving Be Real. I barely post on it anymore.
I never post on Be Real.
Yeah, I never post on it. If you go to my memories, most of them are blacked out. And so I think that is a testament to the fact that probably not, because all these other apps have just become one-stop shops. It used to be a time when all these social media apps had their own function and purpose, and now they are all just amalgamating into one.
Yeah.
And so, no, like, I think we're just living in too complicated of a time on social media. Too late in the stage.
Too late in the stage. I mean, also, Be Real required a level of patience that Vine did not.
Yeah, exactly. Be Real, when it was big for a second, was kind of fun, but too much of a gimmick, too simple.
Would you describe Vine as a paradigm shift?
Yeah, I think it was the inception of the short form video, and we're seeing that take over the internet in every way. Like, you're getting Reels, you're getting Facebook, whatever the fuck they're called, YouTube Shorts, like, you know. And I think that is very emblematic of something that we've talked about so much in this season, is just so emblematic of the attention economy. Like, I think Vine perfectly represented that and also kind of incepted it a little bit with the fact that it was the shortest content you can find.
Absolutely the shortest. Yeah, and turned your phone into a place where you could just kind of go into entertainment holes, almost.
Entertainment brain freezing holes, yeah.
Brain freezing holes. I mean, it's sad for Vine, but its biggest legacy and the biggest kind of thing it shifted to was giving us TikTok, which has had probably a bigger influence on our culture at large, but maybe wouldn't exist without Vine.
TikTok's like, that's sad for Vine, couldn't be me though.
Yeah, TikTok's like,
TikTok be like, what Hannah, what's the joke? Come on, you would never survive on Vine.
On Fleek. To close out the episode, here's Izzy.
I will say, I mean, I feel like I've sold Vine as like a very pure and like well-intentioned thing. And for the most part, I do think it was. There were a lot of good people working there, but there were also people there who were just doing their jobs or using it as like a stepping stone to something else. There were people who didn't give a fuck about like what our content was saying to the world. And there was bad shit on there sometimes and like low quality stuff. So it's kind of like, you take the good with the bad. I think our current entertainment landscape isn't what it is without Vine, period. Like, it is absolutely true that that's the case. But yeah, RIP.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.